Grizzly One.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
As I have told all of you, this flu vaccine sucks. Do not use it. It only works in 10% of the cases. And now they're coming up with fake, phony, fraudulent excuses why the population has to take it, claiming, oh, there are going to really be four different strains of the flu, not one. And it's bound to work against one of them. It's like Russian roulette, right? And they're dropping like flies as we're high on Tom Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us by NJDiet.com. And the hawk is talking out there. And it may well require us to have Noah's Ark out there when you heard Bill Evans' broadcast of the weather expected on Sunday. So between the cold and the rain, it's going to be miserable. But let me make mention that there are colleagues of mine. And Justin B. Love, make yourself useful as producer of The Drive Home at 5. We do have posted on the brand new Curtis and Cosby Facebook page, WABC. That's how people can reach it, right? Curtis and Cosby, WABC Facebook page. My remedy as to how I've been able to ward off the flu and the prophylactics and preemptive measures that I have taken here, meticulous, studiously, like Oscar. Remember from The Odd Couple? No, not Oscar. Actually, by Mr. Neat Freak, who was always making sure that everything was in order. Oscar was the grouch. I'm more like Felix Unger. I'm spritzing around here with Lysol. I've got the rubbing alcohol. I'm rubbing everything down. And I'm trying to make it so that this pandemic will not spread. But, oh, what happened, huh? Did you listen to Bernard McGurk earlier today talk about the chosen person, right? Sid Rosenberg, who thought he was smarter than anyone else, pretentious, because he's one of the chosen people down for the count.
Sid officially has the flu. Just diagnosed within the past half hour. And we're all sweating it here. Are we going to catch it?
Yeah, you noticed. Did you hear Bernard McGurk's voice, right? The grip. He'll be out, I guarantee you, by Monday. He'll be down for the count. Doesn't matter how much Jameson, the Irish car bomb, he's going to knock back over the weekend. He's not going to burn out that flu. No way. But remember, it was just a few nights ago on this very program that Sid the Nudge Rosenberg was criticizing me and making fun of me because of my preventative and prophylactic measures against this flu.
Oh, my God, you're like an old Jewish lady down at the pool in Delray Beach.
Yeah, in the meantime, I don't have the flu and you do, Sid. And then Mark Levin. Oh, he toughened up the other day. He came on, even though he acknowledged he had the flu.
I do the best I can. I don't have a cold. I have the flu. I've been husbanding my energy here to be able to do the broadcast today. But my mind is as sharp as ever before.
No doubt about it. But he did muscle through. But he's down for the count tonight. There's just no way he can respond. And I'll tell you what the problem is for both Sid Rosenberg and Mark Levin. Since they're part of the tribe, the chosen people, they don't use the old remedies from the shtetls of East Europe. The liquid penicillin, the Empire kosher chicken soup. They should be stirring it tonight, you know, right before Shabbos. No. You know, they get the store-bought type. Doesn't do the trick. Or Campbell's, come on, really? From Camden, New Jersey? Give me a break. But now, other than the flu, which is tearing through parts of the country, and the CDC is demanding that you get a shot, there is a situation that has evolved in the West Wing of the White House that has been troubling to many, and it cuts across party lines. Rob Porter had been brought on, particularly by the chief of staff, also brought on to replace Rinsal Previs, elevated his status so that he would make sure that the president, instead of getting pounds of paperwork each day, he would wean it down. and he would keep out things that might cause the president to go astray. That was his job. He accompanied the president. In fact, he contributed to the last State of the Union address. Turns out that in his previous two marriages, he was an abuser. You've all seen the picture of the first wife with the shiner, and she has gone on to detail how abusive he was. Well, this was the president earlier today talking about how Rob Porter had to be let go.
We wish him well. He worked very hard. I found out about it recently, and I was surprised by it. But we certainly wish him well. It's a obviously tough time for him. He did a very good job when he was in the White House. It was very sad when we heard about it, and certainly he's also very sad. Now, he also, as you probably know, he says he's innocent. And I think you have to remember that. He said very strongly yesterday that he's innocent.
Wow. Not even a mention of the abused women. I don't know. Our president, when it gets to these kind of issues, he doesn't seem to be to understand the sensitivity involved, especially to talk about the women who certainly were abused by Rob Porter. On the line to get into that is Scotty Nell Hughes, back-to-back, belly-to-belly. We had her on yesterday, conservative grassroots strategist. This statement by the president earlier today, Scotty, did it make it worse or did it at least address the situation?
Well, Curtis, let me say this. Normally, I've always said he's not political. He's not, you know, he's not someone that typically speaks like a politician, so we have to excuse his words. I can't say that in this situation because it's not just this situation that's isolated. It's an entire year culminating into this situation in 2017. President Trump and his White House has always had this cloud of sexism and this inability to handle the sexual harassment issues that are going on in the United States. This has just been ongoing. This did not help. His response did not help. I don't wish Rob well. I wish the two women that he abused, I wish them well. But right now, what has happened, what we have seen, is these women went, they tried to get help. They tried to get help from the Mormon Church. They tried to get help. They told the White House. They told the FBI. They knew of these charges over the year. This is not just an accusation that he can deny. There is proof. There are two divorces based off of his violence. So, no, I don't wish him well, and I am very appalled today by my fellows within the Republican Party and conservatives that are applauding this and applauding him, and instead we should be a body, both Republican and Democrat, united in saying this action is wrong, and bravo to the good men, because this story was brought out by men who called this out and actually had action saying this is not what needs to be happening in our country or anywhere in today's society.
Now, we were told by sources in the White House that when the president was confronted with the visual evidence of the first wife, who clearly had a blackened eye, he was horrified at that. We were told that Chief of Staff Kelly, when he saw that evidence, he was horrified and changed his opinion about being so supportive and protective of Rob Porter. But why don't you think this president was able to mention anything about the abused women today? What is it about his psyche that he can't seem to show empathy or sympathy to women?
Well, and that's the thing. Now, I will tell you to counter, and the problem is we don't know what the president's been told. We don't. I mean, this actually admits that Rob filtered what the president's been told over the past year. So we don't know what information President Trump was given, and that's really concerning. That's another picture that we need to deal with. But, you know, you look at Mike Pence. Mike Pence, the vice president, had the best response when he was first told he's over in South Korea for the Olympics. He sat down and did an interview with Lester Holt. His immediate reaction, the first words was, "I was appalled when I learned of the allegations against Rob Porter." That's the word we need to be using. Appalled, disgusted, not saddened and wished him well. So in this case, the president unfortunately missed a great opportunity to show that there is not a war on women. There is not a war on men. There is a war on bad men and there is a war on bad women. And this crosses all party lines. We missed this opportunity, and I just have to say, who is advising you, President Trump, on the situation, whether it be Ivanka or the First Lady or Hope Hicks? Whatever females of Kellyanne Conway are around you right now, they're not doing the justice to a situation that is only getting worse, and he's the best one that can stop it right now.
Now, Scotty Nell Hughes, because Porter did not have full security clearance, We know why, because clearly there was a court order barring him from coming anywhere near one of his former wives. There were the cases themselves documented. But this could have opened him up to blackmail, because clearly, and I think this is what we all need to understand, is that foreign agents or enemies of our country or even some of our allies could have had this information. And because he had all the sensitive information that he was feeding to the president each day, he was weaning it down. He could have been doing their duty.
Make no mistake, Rob came in from the RNC, Orrin Hatch in the RNC. He came in with that crown. He did not come a part of the Trump campaign team. And my interactions with him were very minimized. But you are correct on this in saying the security clearance. What is even more concerning about it is anybody after a year, you know, I remember about 6 months ago, they purged people out who had, you know, that had marijuana in their system, who had bad credit cards, and they fired them. They said, sorry, it can't happen. If it has taken you a year and you're still not cleared, you don't need to be around something as big as the White House and the leader of the free world. That just doesn't need to happen. That's inexcusable. I don't care how great your resume is, but especially when it is a domestic violence, when it is a violent reason that you can't get security clearance, there is no excuse. There are better people that can serve in that position than you are. Because it's obvious, it's shocking to Republicans right now that a man or a female can go in public and put a smile on their face and be nice and be an absolute monster behind closed doors. I know that's shocking to Republicans, but it's true, and it's happening every day. And it's up to our president to show that this is not acceptable.
We appreciate that. Scotty Nell Hughes, a supporter of the president, but fair and square on this issue of abuse against women. And the really lame, I mean, really lame statement of the president, in which it's almost like he was coming up with an excuse for Rob Porter, claiming, hey, you know, he claims he's innocent. Yeah, Judge Roy Moore claimed he was innocent. You claim you're innocent. Is that what this is, a knee-jerk reaction? And some of you out there, some Trumpers and Trumpettes, you'll accept it all, but boy, it's very troubling to a lot of people out there. Up next, it's like a truck just crashed in federal court in the Southern District in downtown Manhattan in the Pococo trial. Well, that wasn't much of a truck crash. But when we come back, I'll break it down to you how Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, is probably doing the tarantella as we speak.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
528, the theme song for the leg-breaker wartime consigliere Joe Pococo. On trial with three other Italians, all claiming the FBI stands for Forever Busting Italians. But we're into the process of the testimony, and something happened today in which I said to myself when I saw the headline, I said, Capo de Cats, Manage, who you're in Dugorn. That's what my grandfather would have said. What the hell happened here? Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News. Has the Fed's case against Joe Pococo and his three co-defendants collapsed?
Well, it certainly remains to be seen. But today and yesterday were not good days for the prosecution. You have your star witness, someone you've already portrayed as someone who's not trustworthy. You have to end up arresting your own star witness. That's never good. I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
No, so you mean now they didn't arrest him in court, right? In front of the jury.
No, what they did was yesterday he testified, and toward the end of the day's testimony, he says under cross-examination, he admitted that he basically tried to cheat his credit card company. He went down to meet the feds. He stayed at the Waldorf Astoria, and then he paid $600 on his credit card for that. He then said, called up the credit card company and disputed the claim, saying he hadn't been there. Why that's important, because he's got a whole line of lies and falsehoods, you know, throughout his life, apparently. Why this was important was this took place after he signed the cooperation agreement with the feds to help bring the case against Prococo. As part of that agreement, he said he would not break the law after he signed that deal. He broke the law while he was negotiating that deal, basically.
So he's staying at the Waldorf. What, the rooms were like $600 a night? Had he stayed at a Motel 6 or a Super 8, he might have been able to get away with that.
Maybe, although, you know, he's lied about rental cars. He's lied about rent and mortgages. I mean, the guy really does not have the track record. And if you're the Fed, this is a huge black eye. They went to his hotel, I believe, last night and basically put him in prison, federal prison. And that's where he is for the weekend. Will he come out and testify? He was supposed to still be cross-examined on Monday. You know, we don't know what's going to happen now. Will it affect the case? Obviously, it doesn't help the case, but we don't know what else the feds have, who else is going to testify, what evidence they might bring forward. But it's certainly not a good thing, and it's a black eye for former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, who was in charge when all this was going down.
Now, Ken Lovett, I must imagine that wherever Andrew Eva Lice Cuomo is, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, when he heard this news, he was dancing the tarantella.
Yeah, I would say it was not a bad day for the governor. I'm sure he was very happy. I think they think maybe it could be a mistrial, or certainly this helps the case to raise credibility questions even more than there were about Todd Howe. Now, interestingly, the judge in this case said something outside the jury's ear yesterday, but I was actually surprised to hear her say it. She was telling the defense counsel that they were harping too much on the trustworthiness of Todd Howe, and she said, this is the judge, look, we know he's a bad guy, and for the life of me, I can't even understand why your clients went into bed with him, which was weird to hear the judge presiding over the trial to say something like that.
But that was not in front of the jury.
No, it was not in front of the jury, but who knows what the jury reads or hears from family and friends who are reading about the case. It was a surprising comment, I thought.
Well, you know what's going to happen. Tomorrow morning, the jurors who are off are going to get New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. They're going to read your byline, Ken Lovett. It's going to talk about all the mishigash in court, how the very guy that they know was the star witness for the prosecution, Todd Howe, got taken out in chains and shackles from his hotel the night before because he broke his cooperation agreement.
Yeah, it's not good. And by the way, he was going to be the star witness in the next corruption trial involving Cuomo Associates. There's another one coming up in June. What does that do to that case?
And that's about an additional six guys, right, who were involved in shakedowns upstate as part of the Buffalo Billions, if memory serves me correctly.
Absolutely, yes. And so, you know, obviously, I can't imagine they're going to bring Howe in. And if you don't have Howe, what is that going to do to the case?
Ken Lovett, this is like, you're right. I have never heard of a situation. And I mean, I've known of hardcore mobsters, members of the Gambinos, the Genovese, Colombos, Lucchese's, Bananos, De Cavalcantes across the Hudson River in New Jersey, who flipped the script, joined Team America, became cooperators. And they've gone out and done nefarious things against the agreement they signed with the feds. And they never got locked up as a result of that. This is not good. This is not good, Ken Lovett. Oh, my God. I thought the legacy of Andrew Eva Lice Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, I thought it was going to be shattered. I thought Joe Pococo would be swimming with the fishes, either because Cuomo had him have an accident, you know, while he was in a holding cell, or because he decided he would join Team America in order to save his own neck. This is really bad. And the guy who's got a smile on his face like the cat that swallowed Tweety Bird is Andrew Eva Lice Cuomo, that double disgrazia, that double shanda.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
Story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is.
Oil. 12 million barrels of oil each year is used to produce 30 billion plastic bags. 12 million barrels of oil. You imagine that? And there are 500 billion plastic bags annually used in our country. 1 million per minute. And imagine in a nearby landfill, you know, as you pass in the Meadowlands, Or it could be over at Fresh Kills, which used to be the world's largest landfill in Staten Island. You can still smell the stink. That means single-use bags will take 1,000 years to degrade. But who loves plastic bags? But Bill Ervolino, columnist for The Record in New Jersey, and one who collects them. Am I correct about that, Bill?
I don't mean to collect them. They just have a way of building up, and you know, bags with bags in them. Bags everywhere, next to the refrigerator, in the drawer, over here, over there. Yeah, if I remember correctly, and we're about the same age group here, I grew up in Queens. My mother would come home from the Associated with a bag in one hand, a bag in the other hand, both made out of paper. And I didn't have all this plastic in my life. Now I have so much plastic, and I feel bad about it. I feel guilty. I feel like an addict. And so that's why I wrote about it, and I'm going to follow up with suggestions from people on how to break this habit, or at least cut down.
So you're a hoarder of plastic bags, but do you actually use them or just collect them?
I collect them. I make Christmas presents out. No, I don't. People say to me, "Oh, I don't. I recycle them. I use them to pick up after my dog." If you're picking up after your dog, they're not going in the recycling. They're going in with the trash. But what I found out because I asked people, like, what do you do? Apparently, grocery stores, I'm not smart enough to know this, but grocery stores, you can actually return them, and there's a recycling thing where you can return the plastic bags and not, you know, use them for other things, which will make them wind up in a landfill or in the ocean somewhere. You know, there is a figure going around that by 2050, there will be more plastic bags than fish in the ocean. That's how bad it is.
And by the way, Bill Ervolino, admit that if you were to return your plastic bag collection to the local supermarket for recycling, you would have severe separation anxiety, correct?
No, I don't think so. But I can't stop using them. I mean, and I get the Ziploc bags for other things, and I get the plastic hefty bag, whatever it is, for the garbage.
Sure, sure.
I don't know how to do anything else anymore without these bags, and I really want to stop. I feel like it's a good thing. I mean, do you use them? What does your house look like?
I, too, am guilty because we have 4 rescue cats, you know, and when cats are moving about,
I hear them.
They are using the litter box. So when all of a sudden they do stinky poo in the litter box and it's time to change it, you know I don't. It's my girlfriend, Nancy Regula, who does. And she grabs one of the many plastic bags she's collected and then pours it in and then puts it in the general trash container outside.
Right.
So it makes that convenient because I guess years ago when you didn't have plastic bags, you imagine changing a litter box like twice or 3 times a day?
I know. I don't do cats, but I know with my dog, and I have a bigger dog than I've ever had before, so it's a lot of fun cleaning up after.
You've seen people walking their dogs in the
sure.
street, and they have these little plastic bags in their hands, so the moment the dog cops a squat and all of a sudden unloads a bomb on the ground, the people are picking it up with their hands and putting it in a little plastic bag.
I know. And you got the other one, like the newspaper one, those bags are like perfect for the dog, I think. You can wear it like a glove inside out, and then you pick it up and pull it out. It's a lot of fun.
Let me tell you something. I want to guilt you. I really want to guilt you. 100,000 sea turtles and other marine animals die each year because animals mistake those plastic bags that end up in the drink in the ocean for food. Do you feel bad about that?
I feel terrible. I also feel, I hate when I see a fish or one, remember those, I don't even know if they still make these, I guess they must, but those plastic things and you get like a 6-pack of beer and it would be like a little, whatever you would call it, little collars, this plastic handcuffs for the beers, and those things would wind up in the water.
You got to cut those. Yeah, you got to cut those. Before you put them in the recycling or the trash, you got to cut those because those will strangle.
Most of this plastic comes from China, I've been told by people in the distribution.
Oh, so going to blame the red Chinese, huh? You're going to blame
that. Everything in this country that comes from China, except for Chinese food, which comes from the Bronx.
I see.
Everything else is made in China. And now the guy that was in the business, he said to me that most of these bags are made from recycled bags. And he says, otherwise, if they weren't, they couldn't probably afford to make them. So I said, so the irony of this is if you want to get rid of the bags, you have to stop recycling. Because without the bags, they won't be able to make any
more.
Well,
let me suggest this, Spillerellino, that if you don't curb your clutter of plastic bags, your hoarding of plastic bags, your constant use of plastic bags, I will make sure that a plastic bag is put over your head and you're floating in the Passaic River where you will probably incinerate.
Incinerate?
Yes.
And that's, with your cat.
That's a new word. That's a new word. Incinerate. Bill Arellino, you got to get off this Jones. You would think you were on fentanyl from Red China instead of plastic bags from Red China. What a piece of work this guy is. Brought him in from Philadelphia. And, you know, a big Eagles fan, as you would figure, the head of organized crime there. But he's on trial in the U.S. Southern District, downtown Manhattan. Skinny Joey Merlino. And the other day, while one of the rats eating the Parmesan cheese, who is a cooperator and has joined Team America, he's giving testimony, Johnny Jr. Rubio. He mentions that, hey, Skinny Joey's Gumada. And he's got 24, you know, guys with him there, Skinny Joe. And he's, like, perplexed because his wife is right next to him, Deborah. And Deborah, I fornicates him and mad dogs him. And then all of a sudden, you see that they're talking in the hallway, and then they take the elevator down. And who knows how they resolve that. It's a lot different when John Sonny Francisi of the Colombo crime family was on trial. This guy, psychotic, killed 50 people for the Colombos. He's 100 years old, was just released from federal prison in Massachusetts. He's living now with relatives in Greenpoint. When it came out in testimony that John Sonny Francisi of the Colombo crime family, murderer of 50, had a gumada. His wife, who was in the courtroom, went crazy. She pulls out a butcher knife in the hallway. She tries to stab him up. They had to arrest her and lock her up in the woman's jail. And then all of a sudden, the wise guy, what a piece of work, this Skinny Joe Merlino. He's getting out of court yesterday, and he sees one of the jurors. And he goes, hey, sweetheart, how you doing, Sylvia? And so all of a sudden, Sylvia does the right thing. She tells the judge, hey, this guy came up to me with his jadrules, his knuckle draggers. And immediately Skinny Joe Merlino, when questioned by the judge, said, no, I didn't, judge. No, I didn't, you degenerate liar. You know, you should have locked him up, judge, right there. Because the guy was trying to intimidate the juror. Because he knows all he needs is one to have a hanging jury. Oofah.